Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about the latest on health and healing and reversing the disease process. That's important because so many people in this audience who are older and to those who have lived a good life, made the majority of their choices positive, they don't have the same aches and pains and high blood pressure and elevated blood sugar, heart disease, cancers, dementia that the average person does because they're not making average person choices. So good for them. There's one passing that happened today, Don Previn. He was in our running club, phenomenal human being. He used to come by my office all the time on a weekly basis, stick his head in my office door and say, what's the latest? We'd have a couple minute chat. Every week we'd see him in the park. He was also a cinematographer. He helped us with a lot of our filming. He passed. He was 92. I believe that had Don known, let's say at the age of 20, what we now know, at 92, he would look and feel 70. So we're just at a new door. We're about to open that door. And when that door opens, a lot of you will be able to avail yourselves of lifestyle modification and scientific methods to knock 10, 20, 30 years off your biological aging process. So that's good news. Today I'm also going to have on the show the publisher of Robert Kennedy's newest book. Now, why would I have him on? Because everything that the establishment, Anthony Fauci, the New York Times could do to keep you from knowing that book existed, from you reviewers from reviewing the book, and from being honest about where it is, the number one selling book in the world, 700,000 copies, they've done. Now, that is something that some authors have experienced recently. I experienced that with only one book. Of all the books I've written, over 100 books, lots of bestsellers, tens of millions of copies sold. But one book, nobody reviewed it. None of the established reviewers. And you couldn't find it in any of the bookstores. There was a boycott on it. It was called AIDS, a Second Opinion. The publisher, very liberal publisher, Dan Simon, Seven Stories Press, because my philosophy was for every bestseller I would have with one of my major publishers, I had my own imprint, my own publishing line with HarperCollins, New American Library, had did books with Random House, Simon & Schuster, Doubleday, Broadway Books, Dodd Mead, all the big ones. And they were all professional, never had a problem. And they got behind me, I would do tours. But then I said, let's help the smaller publishing companies. So I work with some of the smaller ones. The first one was Seven Stories Press, and their biggest hit ever was The Egg Project, and that was followed by Get Healthy Now. No problems. But when I talk about AIDS and Anthony Fauci, then it was persona non grata. And yet the book, over 700 pages with around 5,000 references from the peer-reviewed literature, they didn't care. He was so concerned that he hired Professor Jim Fix to come in, a feast to come in and go over every single statement to make sure it was scientifically valid. And he did. So we had a book that told the truth that we were being lied to and manipulated by Anthony Fauci. I also went after Robert Gallo in this book. Everything you see wrong with COVID was exactly wrong with AIDS. And there were hundreds of thousands of people died because of their advice and excluding all other preventative therapies and or early therapies. There was no money given by Anthony Fauci to research, let's say, how to help a person with natural antiviral properties or immune-enhancing diets. Nothing. All vaccines and then one drug, AZT. So I've been there. I wanted to see what it was like for Robert, who I know, and his publisher. So he's going to be on a little bit. But we're also going to take issue with starting the new year by pushing back on the woke culture. Now, the woke culture is like an intellectual herpes. And a lot of people chose just to ignore it. When I first heard about the woke culture, I remember seeing someone on television called something about the liberal Sherpa. I thought it was a parody. But then when I started hearing this, you cannot change your baby's diapers unless you get their permission because you're violating their body. I'm thinking, that's insane. That's got to be parody. It wasn't. When I heard them saying, you cannot eat French food, Chinese food, Japanese food in clothing from another country in the style. It's cultural appropriation. And you can't listen to their music. And you can't look at their art. So if I went into a museum and I'm from America, I couldn't look at any art from artists who were not American. Well, that leaves me very few of the classics, Frederick Church, Thomas Cole, etc. This is insane. And when I talk with some of my academic friends, and I've been in academia for 45 years, do you support this? No, we don't support it. Do you challenge it? No, we don't challenge it. Why not? Because we don't want 500 students showing up the next day at my house, in my work, and filing Title IX to have me investigated. They are anonymous. I'm not. With the risk of losing my pension. I can't afford that. So it's time that we all, at least if you believe that the woke culture is in a spiritual coma, deep coma, that maybe it's time that we just said, children, we know you're having a bad day, you're in your terrible twos, how about waking up today and realizing you have created nothing. You don't see humor in anything. You want to cancel everyone. You have no capacity for intellect or reason or humanistic values. I'm starting today. Over the next 7 days, I'm going to do 7 commentaries. Challenge them. You can agree or disagree. But I don't apologize for being on the right side of an issue. And I'm sorry for those people who feel that they have to apologize. You heard me say several times years ago, I will never apologize for curing people. And yet we were all led, every single nurse, practitioner, dietitian, medical doctor, dentist, everyone. If we did good with a patient without using orthodox methods, maybe traditional Native American, maybe traditional Bush doctor, they're called Bush hut doctors down in Jamaica. Maybe in the Blue Mountains, the doctors using Native, maybe the healers in the Himalayas using Tibetan philosophy. How about traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine? Long-held views that have been shown to be scientifically accurate. Why should we be the ones apologizing, bowing down in front of the arrogant, our narcissistic, egotistical medical doctor who doesn't have, has the intellect, absolutely, has the discipline, completely agree, but does not have the curiosity to be open to experience what may lie inside of another healing therapy beyond their own, and then go further, not only not be interested, but then be resistant and then attack it. So we have to apologize for curing people that you cannot cure, and we have the evidence. But no matter what evidence you have, it will never be enough for a closed mind. But that's true about everything that's been politicized and idealized in the last several years. So I'm going to deal with that also. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. And by the way, you'll hear me for part of the discussion, then you'll see the conversation because of the technology, new technology we're bringing in to where I'm at. New microphones, a new lighting, and we're some dedicated systems. We're switching back and forth because I'm asking you to call in later to share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Isn't it kind of arrogant to brag about the success of treatments when patients die? Get all the money you can? Learn nothing from the experience and go on to kill more? And the people who have actually done good should be held by some guilt notion of shaming because they're not doing it by your rules? Well, that's Anthony Fauci. So what I'm going to do now is we're going to take a look at some of the issues that we have not been paying a lot of attention to, but we should have. All right, we begin with the access to integrative therapy. There's your integrative therapy, all types of meditation and yoga, exercise, plant-based diet, proper supplementation. That's what I mean by integrative therapies. And yet, Byron Maher Hospital published an article in the Journal of Oncology, that's your top journal, that shows that breast cancer survival is longer, substantially longer, when you have integrative therapy. Now, this is interesting because it goes back to a phone call that was made asking, would I speak with a person? Cognan Woods was the person's name, and he was the official person overseeing all quack therapy. And he had a book, and it was called The Unproven Methods of Cancer Management Book. So when I sat down with him, and it was very congenial, very, very nice conversation, and I asked him a simple question. What are the criteria to get you labeled as a quack with cancer? Well, you're not a legitimate medical doctor, that's one. Or you're making a lot of money off of it. Two, you're promising miracle cures, and there's no cures. Three, you have not published in peer-reviewed journals. You are not invited by prestigious scientific organizations to present your findings. And he went through all these. Okay. So I have some names here. Please tell me, since they're all in your book, all right, and they're all quacks and charlatans, let's go through them. Okay. And I went through them, Dr. Lawrence Burton and Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski, Dr. Joseph Issels, Dr. Virginia Living-Sweeney, Dr. Al-Kaidi, Dr. Manuel Vesey, went through all of them. Not one single negative criteria against any of them. I said, well, where'd you get your information on Dr. Joseph Issels? Where's the studies of his work and shown that it didn't work? Well, we don't have that. What do you have? He had one thing that he showed me from a scandal publication, one of these tabloids, that said that he was making promises that weren't real. And who were the people saying that he wasn't helping? Some members of the Royal Academy of Sciences in Great Britain, or the Royal Society. I would later go to their offices and ask them the same question. And they had nothing to support their contention, zero. But Dr. Joseph Issels did have on his side a Dr. Audier from Leiden University published a major peer review study showing that for terminal cases when it was zero chance of survival, you would all die, 16.6% of his patients not only survived but were cured. So the BBC, Gordon Higginson, one of their top producers, and it took me forever to find him. He was in Ireland, but I didn't have an address. I just knew a county, and then I had to go everywhere you could go and ask people, do you know Gordon Higginson? No, and then one guy, yeah, he lives out in this direction. So I got a cab, and I said, could you take me out here, and we'll find this guy? And we did. And he was he's a rough and tough guy. No nonsense, no pleasantries. Get to the point. And he took a whole team to Joseph Issels' establishment in the great Tegernsee Lake area in what would be called Bavaria, part of Germany. And there he said that he was allowed to look at all the patient records, and he specifically wanted patients who were deemed cured. But other medical organizations had to do the evaluation and early treatment, and they're the ones who said these people were terminal, no longer could help them. Then Issels went to work, and 5 years later, they had no cancer in their body. That was the standard, and he found over 500 of these people. He went to do a special, and that's when those doctors' names came up again, because they were the ones who were calling the BBC. Aubrey Singer was the gentleman's name, and saying, don't play that, that promotes quackery. And there was pressure put to bear on this, and so it wasn't played. But then news got out, how I don't know, but someone leaked a copy of the film to a Dutch journalist who then did a front page story on it, which caused an enormous amount of backlash against the BBC, which is an utterly corrupt organization, in my opinion, completely controlled by the government, and their M16, and it forced them to play it. That became the most watched documentary in BBC history up to that point. So, but here I am in New York, and this is the beginning of my trip to find out all this. And so here you had everyone actually curing cancer, improving survival, improving the conditions, and as a result, being attacked for it. Interesting, isn't it? And therefore, today, try to get any documentary on showing a disease being reversed without the typical medicines. And by the way, all these doctors had something in common. They didn't use any chemotherapy or the traditional standard treatments. After all, the patients already had that, hadn't worked. They were all brilliant people. I share that with you simply because I began to advocate for integrative therapy on my radio program starting in 1970 and going through until today. So here it is. Now they actually have in their own journal, quote, improved breast cancer survival among patients who had access to integrative therapies, including nutritional consultations or programs, exercise consultations or programs, patient support groups or patient survivor pairings, spiritual services, psycho-oncology support, massage therapy, meditation or mindfulness, yoga, acupuncture and acupressure, music or art therapy, Reiki or therapeutic healing touch, and Tai Chi or Qigong. Wow. So when I look back, because I was a part of this, here I'm seeing the very things that we were advocating that were available, and some people, small percentage, took advantage of it, but 98%, 99% of people didn't. Now, I had someone from Sloan Kettering, top oncologist. I had one of America's top pain medical doctors. I had an oncologist and professor of oncology from University of Pittsburgh. All happened to be there at the same time when I did a retreat. It wasn't part of the anti-aging. And they saw things they said were not possible, but they were there and they saw, and it was possible. Would they change? Would they integrate any of these? Would they do follow-up? The answer was no. It just shows you that even when shown the truth and shown the limitations of your own practice, what causes a person, what causes a doctor to say, I saw with my own eyes, I saw the tumors disappear within 2 weeks, and yet I won't go further. It was Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt psychology, who said a fear of knowing is a fear of doing, which meant that if they chose to come in to the Tri-State Healing Center and see how all this was occurring, then that might convince them that the choice they had made were not the right choices. Well, then what do they do? Do they live with the guilt of having treated people without the full a complement of all therapies that can help them? How do you deal with that? But anyhow, I just want to let you know that now they're accepting the alternative approaches as part of the overall program, and it's giving patients who had the chemotherapy and radiation a longer life, a longer, 3 times greater 5-year survival among the patients who did the... it was even higher for those that did all the therapies or most of the therapies. 48% higher survival. That's according to their own statistics. That's pretty substantial. If you doubt me, ask anyone who's been given a death sentence and they're approaching that timeline and they start preparing with fear and trepidation of the end, the loss. And you say, okay, let's do A and you get to live another 2.5 years. That's a big deal. Also from the Cleveland Clinic, an article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Surgery, substantial weight loss can reduce the risk of severe COVID complications. I've been saying this from day one. Haven't I? Haven't I said, let's have a national program to help people reduce weight? Let's have a fitness agenda to stimulate a healthy immune system. Let's get everyone a healthy diet, exercise, stress management, and lots of vitamin D3, vitamin C, quercetin, and some other nutrients like zinc, manganese, etc. Nothing, not a single thing. But here's Cleveland Clinic saying, hey, if you're overweight, then you have a 60% lower risk of developing severe complications from COVID infection. 60%? That's better than a vaccine. And that's not just for 3 months. So it's important. We just have to understand how important it is. So reduce the weight, and we should have a lot of support for that. And finally, from Nanjing University, which is in China, an article about ginkgo, G-I-N-K-G-O, biloba, B-I-L-O-B-A, taking it on a regular basis can provide help against ischemic stroke and help survivors live longer. That's right, because it maintains brain's command and control ability, known as executive function, as well as aid in other areas at risk of decline among those who have experienced a stroke. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Stroke and Vascular Neurology. That's important. And I'll do one last one, and this is from Singapore, the Nanyang Technological University, doing less, achieving more, how the practice of WUWEI, that's W-U-W-E-I, can boost athletic performance. When athletes experience a state of flow or in the zone, they sometimes describe the feeling as one of effortlessness. Although their exertions may feel effortless, what their bodies achieve in terms of performance can be extraordinary. In recent years, an increasing number of sports psychologists recommend that athletes practice mindfulness as part of their mental preparation for competing. Mindfulness aims to develop a non-judgmental awareness of the present moment and can not only improve focus, but also promote that elusive state of flow. In a conceptual review published in Key Eyes, Asian Journal of Sports and Exercise Physiology, they put this ancient Chinese wisdom called WUWEI into practice, and it made a huge difference. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to directly go to Tony Lyons talking about the censorship of Bobby Kennedy's books and other books when it comes to understanding the real Anthony Fauci. Anything and everything that can be done by the establishment to protect Fauci protects them, because they keep doubling down on everything Fauci says, giving him form, not challenging him. And that's not the way it's supposed to work, as you'll see. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. Now to censorship. The censorship of Bobby Kennedy's books and other books, The Real Anthony Fauci. My guest is Tony Lyons. He is the president and publisher of Skyhorse Publishing, a company that's published over 10,000 books. It has made a name for itself by publishing highly controversial books on vaccine risks, autism, and more recently, a book about censorship, also a book about Robert Kennedy. He's also published books by Alan Dershowitz, Philip Roth's biography, and he is the publisher of this book, and he's running into a lot of censorship and problems. Let's find out how this is unfolding. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks so much.
Given an overview of the book's success so far, approximately how many copies have been sold, and do you have any indication whether it's reaching that divide in the population that separates the followers of the government's COVID narrative from its detractors?
Sure. So, you know, the book is The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So over the last 6 weeks, it's been the best-selling book in America. It sold over 600,000 copies in all formats. And, you know, it's done that despite an incredible total media blackout where newspapers haven't reviewed it. Bookstores won't carry it. TV networks don't mention it. Libraries won't carry it. Big tech platforms won't let you advertise for it. The New York Times wouldn't let us advertise for it. They played games with the bestseller list, you know, even though it was the best-selling book for the first 2 weeks, using the NPD book scan numbers. It was still listed as number 7 and number 8. So they're using every conceivable tactic to get people not to buy the book. And it's, you know, even to the level of using the playbook of attack the author and ignore the allegations in the book. So there have been something like 10 hit pieces published by all kinds of newspapers and magazines, including the AP, that had 6 investigative reporters digging into Kennedy's life and into his nonprofit, and of course finding nothing of any interest, but, you know, really trying to find some way to discredit the author as a way to avoid addressing the allegations in the book.
This is modern day McCarthyism, and unfortunately, and an embarrassment to all of us who grew up believing in and espousing liberal values. And certainly all of us who saw the dangers of censorship earlier on in our careers. And we all saw it. I saw it when Dan Simon of Seven Stories Press, where I had multiple bestsellers, me and hardback books sold. And that was a rare thing. That was just one of the books, sold 1,300,000 copies in hardback at, I think it was $40, and not a single return. And yet, when I wrote the book, AIDS, A Second Opinion, that challenged everything Anthony Fauci was doing, of his promotion of AZT, which was killing people, estimated up to 300,000 people died because they took AZT, and all the different groups that got money from the makers of AZT, then started the attack. And my publisher said, to make sure that everything in the book was accurate, he hired Professor Jim Feast to go over every single fact, and he did. Took an extra 6 months to do that. We had thousands and thousands of footnotes, not a single review. Nobody would review it. And the people came out to attack it were the people who were on the side of AZT and Anthony Fauci. Kind of reminds me of what happened to me now that I see it happening to Bobby. So, in point of fact, has there been any legitimate criticism of the book, or is it all just people who haven't read the book, don't want to read the book, and yet know that it couldn't be good?
Yeah, so it is all the latter. I mean, the idea that they're using is that this book is misinformation. So even when we tried to place ads in the Times, they let us, after an incredible negotiation that I documented and that I'm going to write about, they let us place one ad, but they took out the Nobel Prize winning scientist blurb saying that that was misinformation. So the idea is that they call a book misinformation, having not read it, knowing nothing about the contents, and basing that just on the cover and on the title. So the idea here is, you know, this is a book that has, you know, like your book, it has 2,194 citations. It was meticulously researched. It has blurbs from doctors and lawyers and scientists, you know, and it's got the blurb by a Nobel Prize winner. Robert Kennedy worked on this book 16 hours a day, 7 days a week for 9 months. He's an incredible researcher. He's brought, you know, more than 500 lawsuits in his career. Of fighting corruption and corporate greed. So, you know, this is not misinformation. This is legitimate research, and this is punishment for not following the mainstream narrative. This is attack as a strategy to censor a book. And it's just done, like I said, on every single level.
Have you observed any efforts by government officials to try to get Bobby's book banned from distributors such as Amazon or any of the other major players? We saw earlier Senator Elizabeth Warren making such an attempt to get Amazon to drop Ronnie Cummins' book off, and he's one of the most important voices in challenging GMOs and promoting organic and sustainable agriculture.
Yeah, so what's been happening there is that, like you said, there was a group of senators who wrote to Amazon trying to get them to censor specific books. And I believe that they would have kept on going. Mr. Kennedy wrote the preface to that book that they tried to have taken down. It appears that Amazon is deciding not to follow that kind of playbook and not to bend to politicians trying to have things taken down that they disagree with.
I even noticed that your interview on Tucker Carlson was removed from YouTube. I see a lot of this associated with the rise of social wokeness within the liberal culture center that is ready to cancel everything that is contrary to their beliefs and ideologies. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the idea that Dr. Fauci is trying to put out there, and it's worked with a certain segment of the population, is that whatever he says represents science. And if you disagree with him in any way, that you're anti-science. So there have even been peer-reviewed studies. I mean, there have been lots of them that have been published, but then later taken down because they question something that Dr. Fauci or that others disagree with. So, you know, this is not about science. This is strictly about a way for people to maximize their return on investment. So Dr. Fauci is clearly not concerned with public health. And he even says that in his own way. So he said many times that his favorite book is The Godfather. And he says that his favorite line from the book is, "It's not personal, it's just business." So I think that's an incredibly telling line from somebody who's been at the forefront of the government's position on public health for the last 50 years, that it's about money, it's not about people. And that's something that clearly has to stop. And censorship is just a tool that's used to prevent any kind of discourse and any kind of dialogue. And anybody who knows what science really is, I mean, science can't be about one point of view being the truth. Science has to be about dialogue, and it has to be about thousands of different people coming up with all kinds of ideas and disagreeing with each other. I mean, science is supposed to be messy. Science can't be sort of a fascist tool to get people to buy certain products that help big pharma or other groups make more money. That can't be what science or public health is about.
I agree. I'll just share this final thought. When I was fighting Fauci and Anthony Gallo and Robert Gallo and Anthony Fauci, first I fought them showing that what they were saying about AZT was wrong, how they were defining who was susceptible to getting HIV infection and dying was wrong. The HIV antibody test, like the current PCR test, was wrong. It was inaccurate. It was not a unique test that only targeted the HIV virus. And so therefore they were putting people's lives at risk. And they also said, if you have HIV infection, you will die, which was wrong. But then we went one step further, and over a 15-year period, I reversed HIV infection, HIV status, and took people who were near death to complete health, total cured. And there were 18 of them. We proved it. We had the documentation. But we kept 1,200 people who were HIV positive but very sick alive, and they all regained their health. They weren't on the advanced protocols. Not a single media in the United States, not one. We sent our results, medical records, all the evidence in a press conference. Nobody attended. When I say nobody, I mean nobody, not a single person, except the cured people and the medical doctors on our team who were working with them using my protocols. That's a story that I'm very familiar with because I was the heart of that. And so I see now they're doing the same thing Robert Kennedy Jr. that they did to me. You attack the concept, then you attack the person, then you even attack the people who are the patients who reverse their disease. So if someone were to talk about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibodies today, all FDA approved for off-label use, they would be attacked. And they would be politicized. And they've weaponized any preventative measure. Don't do anything except listen to them and get your vaccines. Their vaccines have failed miserably. And yet the American media should be held accountable in crimes against humanity because they haven't told the truth once, not once. Everything we've been told is a lie. Thank you for having the courage to publish this book. I know what happened to Dan Simon. He took a thumping for taking on this truth, yet he did. And I commend him for his courage. And thank you for taking on the book because you knew you were going to get hit. Robert's used to getting hit. He's tough all the way through. But we're going to fight back, and we are.
Yeah, I'm just really grateful for people like you and for people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. who are willing to really be concerned with public health and to really try to help people versus people who are just trying to make money. And, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. isn't making one penny on this book. Dr. Fauci, you know, he's donating all of his royalties. And Dr. Fauci, you know, who currently makes something like $450,000 a year, plus all kinds of side money in all these royalty deals that he makes. But he also has a retirement package that is $350,000 per year. So there's a reason that they don't want you to read this book and that, you know, they don't want people like you, Gary, to go out there telling people that they can use unpatented antivirals to cure themselves or to prevent COVID, because that is an attack on their ability to extract money from the population. So if you look at these kinds of things,
Tony, you and I both know that the truth will not come out anytime in the near future. It will only come out when enough people begin to realize they've been lied to, manipulated, and used for financial or political or ideological gain, and therefore stop doing anything that they say to do. If we don't do that, if we don't say no and push back, then look at Austria. Look at Australia. That's coming to the United States. Look at Germany right now. The internment camps, the vaccine internment camps, is being proposed in our Congress right now. So it's coming. So it's time for people to stand up. And I want to give a shout out to all the people who went to Albany yesterday and were up there protesting. The whole plaza was filled, thousands of people. But we need millions of people. Thanks a lot. Nice to have you on.
Thanks so much.
We take this break. Again, thank you for all who went to, I know a lot of people went to Albany from this audience, and because when I was watching the video early this morning, I saw a lot of familiar faces. So good for you. You deserve a lot of respect because you took the time, energy, and effort to challenge authority. I wish more people, especially those who feel comfortable expressing their views concerning what they see as a challenge to many of our traditional and very positive and very healing efforts in our society to bring people together, to see apologies, to see forgiveness, to see conciliation, cooperation, and a sense of community where you do not see a person's ethnicity or their culture, their educational status, their income status. You simply see people as human beings, sacred spirits, wanting to work together to make it a better world, not just for themselves, but other people. I just wish more would put their thoughts, however articulate they are, to paper, send them to me, and I will read your thoughts on the air, with your permission. If you don't want your name given, fine. If you do, I will. Send your commentaries, an offer of a challenge to the cancel culture, the woke generation, the identity politics group, to prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. I'll lead off with my own and Richard Gale's. This is called White Fragility and the New Tribalism. Of course, there's going to be anger, and should be, over any form of racism or bias or prejudice. And this has raged during the past several years, but for different reasons and on different levels. Legitimately, we should have all been in the streets protesting not just the criminal and unnecessary deaths of African-American citizens by our police and some of the deranged white supremacists, which has now infiltrated corporate boardrooms, legislative assemblies, and schools and university policymaking, but also all the other reasons that we should be protesting the entirety of our foreign wars and the permanent and ever-growing military-industrial complex, the permanent and ever-growing medical-industrial complex, the permanent and ever-growing intelligence surveillance of citizens complex, and the still staying wedded to fossil fuel and not making any honest, concerted efforts to change over because of who really pays the bills for many of the legislators at the state and federal level that determine when and by mandate when anything actually happened that changes our environment. These are all legitimate reasons to raise your voice and say no more. Or in my opinion, I've shared this with you, I believe our entire justice system is completely corrupt and cannot be corrected. From the Attorney General and all the people working in the Justice Department to the state Attorney Generals, you see crimes against humanity. In fact, the one of the good projects that I certainly would support, and I hope you do too as well, is the Innocent Project. Finds upwards of 40% of all incarcerated people shouldn't be there. And I agree. We should not have a war on drugs. And some people agree to that as well. And you shouldn't disagree just because you've been convinced that somehow it's a moral violation to use a drug. No, it's a choice, and there are consequences, and almost never a good consequence unless it's one of the derivatives of the CBD oils to help you with legitimate conditions that can have legitimate positive outcomes. But we're not fighting those battles. We're not protesting against those. We're not protesting against the unmitigated greed of the corporate boardrooms. So as the pandemic dominates the headlines, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because my entire life I've supported the liberal media, it remains silent to call out the power of wokeness that now wields over many of our fundamental institutions. To an outside observer, it may appear that the woke meme has reached a confrontational peak as many diverse, disjointed voices, sometimes seemingly incoherent, speak against and pass each other. When issues of race become so polarized within a politicized social context, the entire message of raising anti-racist awareness becomes lost in the static. And hence today we are faced with the reality that those saying anything that you do, anything you say, anything you write is racist, when time and again there is no racism associated with something. And the media does not call this out and say the new pro-racist movement is the new anti-racist movement. So what we're seeing is something right out of George Orwell's 1984. And it's embarrassing that those who profess to have an intellect, a social consciousness, a history, an awareness of the world we live in, an awareness of that history, that you're staying silent, either because you're complicit or because you're afraid of the consequences. As long as we are afraid of the consequences of our personal truth, our collective truth, than those who are against us in ways that are without reason. For example, the current movement to say that math is racist. Math has nothing to do with race. And yet, now some schools in Washington State are saying, you don't want to take math, we won't teach math. Okay. Well, how important is math to your life, to an airplane, to a space shuttle, to a new technology, to things that could save your life? So this is how absurd it's gotten. But it's also gotten to where they're not just happy to say something that is unreasonable. They want children in school not to like the idea that their mother and father exist. There are no mothers. There are no fathers. You're simply one of us. You're part of the collective whole. And then they take a child to a point where the child goes home confused and angry and sad because they don't know what to believe. Because so many parents, again, and this is a lot of parents from all walks of life, but especially the professional parents who should know better because they really are dedicated to their careers. They worked hard to get those careers as lawyers, judges, journalists, accountants, CPAs, scientists. And yet, when was the last time they went to a PTA meeting and sat down to listen to what the curriculums are they're being taught and how are they being taught? They only find out by accident when it's on the news that someone's challenging at a local local board meeting. And now what happens? Instead of saying, yes, let's look at our curriculums. Are they teaching anything that denies the virtue and value of a family making the important choices in life? Do they have children believing that you should only have one parent? Because that is being taught. They denied it. The former governor of Virginia, one of Clinton's acolytes, denied that critical race theory is being taught in school, and yet we went right over there and found all the curriculum that is being taught, and there's critical race theory and books and textbooks and books and textbooks teaching it. Out and out lies. And yet the mainstream media will never call them out, and it shows you how complicit they are in the problem. They're promoting it. So, we have a very confused society today, and that's dangerous because it divides itself, and that's dangerous. We're balkanizing it, and that's dangerous. We're now going back to tribalism, and that's extremely dangerous. To an outside observer, it may appear that the woke memes are what we should be paying attention to, but we shouldn't. We should look for reason, sensibility, historically positive and virtuous values, moral values, societal values, people who care about just not themselves but their neighborhood and all their neighbors. And that is where we're at this moment, not knowing what to believe in. So people remain quiet. So fortunately, there are progressive anti-racial organizations and local movements in our society. Color of Change, Live Free USA, Resource Generation, Equal Justice Initiative, who believe that we should be working together and therefore not just a cacophony of institutional noise. In the past, we've always supported public demonstrations against social injustice in all of its forms and manifestations. But why is the mainstream media and the college intellects and professors have refused to call out Robin DiAngelo's writings and do a critique of them? I have said and I will stand behind that my personal feelings are she's the most dangerous human being in the 21st century. And her book, White Fragility, is no different than Mein Kampf, written in 1925 by Adolf Hitler, who was a totally illiterate. And it was Hermann Hesse that actually did most of the writing. It was still very juvenile. But it was extremely successful at causing the death of millions of people. And that is unfortunate. Over the years, in our efforts to share unbiased criticism and constructive solutions into controversial issues and debates over racism and social and economic inequality, we've recently singled out Robin DiAngelo's writings and her bestseller. We have done so because we find that the deeper underpinnings of her message are fundamentally flawed and put forth an elitist position that theoretically silences any constructive debate about race, even if held on neutral grounds. This adolescent, immature, childish rubbish is not philosophy. It is garbage for the mind. It is the junk food for the mind. But then hold on. Don't most Americans eat junk food? Yes. Don't most people watch the media? Yes. Do most people believe in some of these ideologues like the former Rush Limbaugh or some of the others, right and left? Yes. And that's a problem. So this is only contributing to a deepening of the spiritual coma within large segments of our population. Attorney David Burke describes the book as, quote, snake oil masquerading as insight. Moreover, white fragility is intellectually fragile, impoverished by a lack of convincing facts to buttress her premises, and in some cases, mangling facts altogether in order to convince whites of their guilt-ridden birthright. For example, her claim that Congress is 90% white hasn't been true for decades. Then we find some twisted logic such as, quote, I believe that white progressives cause the most daily damage to people of color. I define a white progressive as any white person who thinks he or she is not a racist or is less racist. Hence, in her mind, it's a catch-22, very clever. If you have never done anything in your life or your ancestors against race, but before making that judgment, you look and find that they were all for liberation, they were all abolitionists, they sacrificed their lives in the Civil War, and they fought in the Revolutionary War for the freedom to have the experiences you want in life. But now, if you try to say you're not racist, it makes you a racist. So that is an extremely toxic element. White fragility is largely based upon the controversial theory of implicit bias that attempts to explain racism as a deep-seated systemic problem. Implicit bias is defined as unconscious favoritism towards or prejudice against people of a particular race, gender, etc. It is understood as being based upon unconscious associations and feelings. Despite Dr. Angelou's basing her premise upon implicit bias as something hardwired, there's absolutely zero proof that that is true, as if it were programmed into the brain at birth. She knows, quote, we simply do not understand how implicit bias works. Yeah, well, then if you don't understand anything about your argument, don't make your argument. Just simply say, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. There's no proof of it, but I'll just say that I believe it is true, and therefore everyone must say it's true, and therefore it becomes absolute. What nonsense. This is perhaps one of her very correct observations. A growing number of psychologists are showing empirically that in practice, the implicit association test is horribly inaccurate. The theory fails to predict behavior. Implicit bias training, which D'Angelo regularly offers to educational institutions, corporations, has been largely unsuccessful. In reviewing his book, Reinventing Racism, Why White Fragility is the Wrong Way to Think About Racial Inequality, economist and philosopher Jonathan Church has analyzed the deep flaws in implicit bias theory in great depth. Together, this raises a further question as to whether implicit bias actually exists as any kind of absolute condition. And since D'Angelo believes that all whites own unhealthy racial perceptions towards people of color, and therefore they are, in principle, irredeemable, she is implying this implicit racial bias is genetically inherited. Consequently, D'Angelo is preaching a form of cloaked scientific determinism that could have enormous detrimental repercussions in the future if it were to become a standard course in our schools' menus. In effect, similar to the doctrine of scientific materialism espoused by the larger community of neuroscientists, evolutionary biologists, and modern skeptics, and the new atheists, she's advancing a misanthropic dogma against the entire human race. This is secular religion at its worst. This is the new cult. I'm Gary Nall. Those are just some thoughts to start this new year when we're going to push back against any situation where it is detrimental to the well-being. We need positive solutions working together without identifying race or religion or economic status or social position as the determinant of whether we are qualified to offer our insights. Think of all the great achievements that we've made through all of the turbulent years of our society and to where we have come. Why not give some credit to all the people throughout history in the United States who contributed to making it a better world for us? Then look at all the people who are making it a more unsafe world. They have all the power. And now the people making it a better world have none of the power. That has to change. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening and watching today, and have a nice day.